Abraham had said the night they escaped from the mansion, that the Countess used birds as spies. Emma was trying to make up her mind what to do when she heard feet pounding down through the trees, and Gabriel was there, calling to her in a fast, angry hiss. "Get down! Now!" She scrambled off the rock, skinning the heels of her hands. Gabriel unslung his long rifle and put it to his shoulder. The bird was flying away from them, and though it grew smaller and smaller with each wing beat, Gabriel didn't fire. He merely followed it, as if there were an invisible string stretching from the bird to the tip of his rifle. With each passing second, Emma's panic rose, and she prayed for him to shoot, as if by killing the bird he could erase her fault. Finally he did, when the bird was no more than a black speck against the blue. For a moment, nothing happened, and Emma was sure he'd missed. Then the bird talked sideways and fell in a twisting spiral into the trees. The other men were beside him now, gathered at the edge of the cliff.
"One of her messengers! She knows!"
"Perhaps." Gabriel slung the rifle back across his shoulder.
"Our only hope is speed. We leave immediately."
As one, the men disappeared into the trees up the hill. Emma seized Gabriel's hand. She was on the verge of tears.
"Gabriel, it's my fault.
Dina told me to get down, but I was stupid.
I..."
Gabriel knelt beside her. She expected him to be angry. The mission was already dangerous. Now it was only more so. But when he looked at her, he seemed simply disappointed. Somehow it made her feel even worse.
"If the Raven was tracking us, it's been tracking us since the village. Seeing you made no difference. Come."
He turned and allowed her to clamber onto his back. She locked her arms around his neck, burying her head against his shoulder as he rose and started up the mountain. Hot, silent tears streamed down her face. Her fantasies of a minute before, of acting haughty when she saw Kate and Michael, returning to haunt her. She promised herself she would be smarter. She would do whatever Gabriel said, sacrifice whatever was asked, if only it meant seeing her brother and sister again. She would be better. Emma closed her eyes and let herself be borne effortlessly up the mountain. Chapter 19. The Battle of the Dead City. Hamish had refused to get out of the pool. He stood there, waist-deep in the black water, knife in one hand, roaring at the secretary and his screechers to come get him. But something must have brushed his leg, for he gave a yelp and, with one remarkably nimble leap, flew out of the pool. He was fallen upon and bound immediately. Even then, with a screecher's boot on his neck, he kept up a string of curses. The secretary ignored him. Grinning victoriously at Kate, he jerked his football-shaped head toward the stairs, and the Moram Cadi yanked the dwarves to their feet and began marching them up toward the dead city. Kate and Michael, the only two whose hands weren't tied, were allowed to walk together in the middle of the group. Wallace and the white-bearded Fergus were at the head, while Hamish, who sounded like he was being dragged protesting up each step, brought up the rear.
"Kate, I know. It'll be okay. You always say that. How is it going to be okay?"
Kate had to admit Michael had a point.
"I don't know, but it will be. I'll think of something."
She took his hand, and for a moment they walked in silence, listening to Hamish cursing the screechers behind them.
"So, what did you see?"
Michael asked, even more quietly than before.
"What were you going to tell me?"
Kate opened her mouth to tell him about their mother, but the words that came out were,
"I saw Dr. Pym."
"You saw Dr. Pym in the past?"
Kate had to shush him, and he continued in an excited hiss.
"Oh, Kate, that's not a coincidence. Absolutely not. The odds would be, well, I'd need a calculator, but it would be highly, highly unlikely that the book would happen to take you to Dr. Pym. You'd better tell me everything."
So as they climbed the steep corkscrew of stairs, she told Michael about Dr. Pym, the study, the snowy city outside the window. But though she commanded herself, "Tell him who you saw, he deserves to know," each time she started to, she was seized by an inexplicable fear. In the end, she said nothing, and the memory of seeing their mother stayed locked inside her.
"Amazing," Michael said. "He's up to something, some wizardy plot, I can feel it. But how were you able to come back without the book? You need it to move through time. Then again, the book took you to Dr. Pym, and you didn't need a photo. It's all very curious. I know..."
Suddenly Kate heard something and looked over her shoulder. The secretary, wheezing from the climb, had come up behind them.
"What are you two birdies talking about?"
"Nothing."
"Oh, I'm sure, I'm sure. Just so happy to see you again. Very bad losing you in the tunnels. Couldn't tell the Countess that. Thought to myself, where will they go? Clever little birdies like them. To the book, of course. So off I hurried to the dead city, and came you did. Saw you and the little dwarfses sneaking around."
He coughed violently and hacked something grey against the wall.
"But where is little sister? Separated? Lost? Dead, perhaps? Such a shame."
He clucked his tongue in exaggerated sympathy, and Kate had to fight the urge to knock him backward down the stairs. She gripped Michael's hand fiercely.
"Don't listen to him."
They climbed on in silence and, half an hour later, entered the dead city. The screechers led Michael and Kate and the dwarves down rutted, debris-littered streets between the shells of ancient buildings. Overhead, dozens of lamps hissed gassily, casting everything in a yellow-green hue. Everywhere they passed screechers. There seemed to be no end to the black-clad ghouls. Finally, the party stopped at the edge of what Kate guessed had once been the main square. Four enormous open-air cages had been erected, and the children watched as a line of thin, hollow-eyed men were driven into one by a crew of screechers. More men, perhaps 50 total, huddled in the other cages. They sat or stood about listlessly, like ghosts, but as awareness of the dwarves and even more, or so it seemed to Kate, of her and Michael spread among them, the men began to gather at the bars of their cages, staring at the children with wide, sunken eyes. The secretary hissed an order, and she and Michael were wrenched apart. Michael and the dwarves herded toward the cages, while the secretary, with a clammy hand locked about her wrist, dragged her toward one of the shattered buildings that ringed the square. He brought her to a room on the second floor and shut the door.
"Have a seat, my dear."
The room was empty save for two chairs, a desk, and a gas lamp that hung on a chain from the ceiling. The setup of the furniture, along with the air of displeased authority, reminded Kate of Miss Crumley's office at the orphanage. How long ago had that been? A month? A year? Had it even happened yet? Of course, Miss Crumley's office wasn't missing a wall the way this one was. Kate stepped toward the edge, hoping to see Michael in the square below. The secretary slammed his hand on the desk, startling Kate.
"Little birdies should do what they're told. Now, please, have a seat."
Reluctantly, Kate came and sat across from him. The man folded his hands and attempted something like a smile. It was then Kate saw the tiny yellow bird peeking out of his jacket. The head and beak were visible for only a moment, then disappeared. The man seemed not to have noticed. He was staring at Kate with a hungry expression.
"So, my dear, you open the vault?"
Kate shrugged.
"Don't know what that means, do you? But I do. Didn't I see it, Yes, moment you arrived, before even the Countess I saw."
As he spoke, his fingers twisted themselves into knots.
The first dwarfie we caught told me how you opened the vault when no one else could. How you touched the book and poof, disappeared, then came back, but no book, just you. Dim, dumb Hamish couldn't have been happy about that, could he?
He plucked his tongue.
Not happy at all, but...
He gave Kate another of his hideous smiles.
To business. Once you touch the book, exactly what happened? And please, be as precise as possible.
Kate said nothing.
Not talking. Of course, so brave, such a heart, but...
He turned his head and whistled. A few moments later, the door opened and a screecher entered, carrying a brutal-looking crossbow. He took up a position behind Kate, where the open wall looked out over the square. Kate watched in horror as he fitted a bolt into the instrument and cranked it back. What's he doing?
Why, he's going to kill someone. Now, I'll not pretend I'm going to harm your brother. You both are far too valuable. However, for every one of my questions you don't answer, he will kill a man from Cambridge Falls, no doubt the beloved father to one of those dear children you met back with the Countess. Understand?
Kate nodded numbly.
Excellent. So, you touched the book, and...
I went into the past.
See? That wasn't difficult. When in the past?
I'm not sure. A few years, I think.
And?
And then I came back.
The secretary barked at the screecher, shocking Kate with the abrupt harshness of his voice.
Kill one!
Wait, wait, okay. Dr. Pym was there.
Ah, so the old wizard has his hand in this. I suspected as much. A powerful adversary, very powerful indeed. And perhaps this wasn't the birdie's first time meeting the good doctor. Mm-hmm. You had a previous acquaintance?
Yes, Kate said quietly.
The picture becomes clear. And did anyone else attend this pleasant reunion?
Kate hesitated.
The secretary raised his hand. Yes, there was a woman.
A woman? Any guesses who?
Kate shook her head.
So, just a random woman, of no importance,
He scratched the side of his head with a jagged nail, then looked at the screecher.
I changed my mind. Kill the brother.
Instantly, the screecher brought the crossbow to his shoulder.
No, I'll tell you, please.
The secretary held up a finger. The black-garbed creature paused, waiting.
It was... my mother.
Your mother? That's very odd indeed.
As Kate watched, he took the yellow bird from inside his jacket and began to caress its head, cooing.
What's he doing, my love? Why the child's mother? How could...
The secretary began to giggle.
Yes, yes, of course. Ingenious and elegant. Clever old man.
He stowed the bird in his jacket and gave Kate his widest, most revolting grin yet.
Well, if the book is in the past, you'll just have to go back and get it, won't you, my dear?
What are you talking about? That's impossible. I can't.
Ah, yes. For how can you go into the past to retrieve the book if you need the book to go into the past? Doesn't make a great deal of sense, does it? A conundrum, a puzzle, indeed. Shall I tell you?
He jumped up, scuttling around the desk till he was in front of Kate, pinning her shoulders back and staring into her eyes.
You've been having visions, haven't you? Things you can't explain. That is because part of the book has passed into you. You and your little brother and sister are the chosen three, and the Atlas has already marked you as its own.
Kate's mind was spinning. The Atlas. It was the first time she had heard the name. What do you mean, marked me? Kate couldn't stop her voice from trembling.
The Atlas is an ocean of power. A few drops of it now run through your veins. Can't the little birdie feel it?
As much as Kate wanted to tell the stringy-haired man she didn't believe him, the fact was she did. Ever since that night in the orphanage in Cambridge Falls, when the blackness had crept off the page and into her fingers, she had known something in her had been changed.
You mean, I can travel through time?
The secretary let out a rough laugh and released her. Kate felt the blood returning to her shoulders. The man began pacing back and forth, yanking on his fingers as he spoke.
No, 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 no. By yourself, not possible, not possible. But with the help of a powerful witch or wizard, oh, yes. You see what the old man did. He wanted to hide the Atlas from the Countess and her master. We're safer than in the past. So he puts a spell on the little birdie, makes her travel back in time. Then he has the birdie leave the book with him, thinking the two of them can retrieve it any time they like.
But it'll disappear, Kate cried. It's already disappeared.
True,
the secretary said, mock thoughtfully.
The book's no more. Evaporated years ago.
He smiled at Kate and then did something truly repellent. He winked.
But what if old man Pym sends the birdie back to the second just after she brought him the book, What about that?
Finally, Kate understood. Yes, the book was gone. It had disappeared a half hour after she left it in the past. But for that half hour, however many years ago, the book had existed. Dr. Pym would simply have her return to that window in time.
But how can he send me into the past? I still don't...
The secretary's patience was ebbing.
Is the birdie deaf? The power is in her now. The wizard can call upon it.
Leaning close, he ran a filthy finger along Kate's cheek.
Must have anchored her here with the same spell that gave the memory, Made it easy to reel her back. Kept his birdie on a short string, didn't he?
Kate was trying her best to put it all together. In the throne room, Dr. Pym had done something to her, cast some spell that had made the book, or Atlas, as the secretary was calling it, take her to a moment in the past. And somehow, that same spell had kept her tied to this time. So once she'd given Dr. Pym the book, she was yanked back to the moment she'd left. The secretary was pacing again, rubbing his hands together.
Ingenious, ingenious, to hide it in the past. Thinks he's foiled the Countess. She can look all she wants, but no book, no atlas, Doesn't exist. Gone, gone, gone. Only too bad for him. The Countess also has the power to send the birdie back in time. And she will, my dear. Oh, she will.
But Kate hated asking the wretched man anything, especially this, but couldn't stop herself. Why was my mother there?
Why? Why? That is everything,
he shrieked gleefully.
Yes, a brilliant detail. You see, the sly old fox knew that one day he would have you retrieve the prize. And even with the power in you, it is no simple thing to send someone across time. Before, his spell could borrow on the power of the Atlas. Now, there's just the little birdie. Much more difficult. requires a strong connection to the moment you wish to reach. A bond, yes. So what did the wise doctor do? He gave you a memory that would outshine all others, one that would burn like fire in your heart. He gave you your mother.
Kate didn't dare move. She had been holding herself together through force of will, but in that moment, she felt as if she was suddenly about to break apart. Just then, there was a squawking and something large and black tumbled through the open wall and crashed onto the floor. The screecher swung around his crossbow, but the secretary screamed,
"No!"
It was an enormous black bird. The creature was wounded and flopped about in a circle, making desperate cawing noises.
"Something is wrong," the secretary said. "Gather the host! Fortify the entrances!"
His command was cut off by a hard thuck, and the dark end of an arrow suddenly protruded from the screecher's chest. The creature fell to its knees. A foul-smelling smoke rose, hissing from the wound.
"Attack!"
the secretary shrieked.
"We are under attack!"
Gabriel's band had entered through the dark northern end of the city. Two screechers standing sentry had been felled by arrows, another by Gabriel's falchion. Emma was amazed at how silently the large, heavily weaponed men moved. They were like deadly shadows sliding among the ruined buildings, and it thrilled her to be with them. Gabriel stopped everyone along a half-destroyed wall a block from the center of the city. They were close enough to the gas lamps to see clearly, and Emma could hear out in the square shouting and the sounds of blows. Glancing down the wall, Emma saw the men spreading out, disappearing down alleys and into buildings to take up closer positions around the square. Dina was beside her. Gabriel had placed them in the charge of a young warrior only a few years their senior, giving the boys strict orders to keep the girls back once the action started. Dina poked Emma in the side, and the two of them, the boy, Gabriel, and half a dozen others, passed through a gap in the wall and into the ground floor of a building that bordered the square. A memory came back to Emma. It was from one night a few months earlier. She, Kate, Michael, and the other orphans at the Edgar Allan Poe home had been taken to a baseball game in Baltimore. Emma couldn't remember anything about the game itself, but she remembered the long tunnel they'd walked down, the muffled sounds of the crowd, the darkness, and then the sudden explosion of light as they'd entered the stadium. It was like that now, crouching with Dina at the hollowed-out window, staring at the harsh, bright scene before them. There were at least 36 Moram Cadi in the square, most of them gathered near 4 large cages. Inside the cages, Emma could see 50 or so sickly-looking men huddled about. Immediately her heart filled with pity. She thought of the Countess, dressed up in her finery, having pretend balls in the Cambridge Falls mansion. Someone should lock her in a cage and see how she liked it. In her mind, Emma went ahead and put Miss Crumley in the cage as well. She knew the orphanage head wasn't the same kind of evil as the Countess, but as long as Emma was locking people up, she figured, why not? Emma's gaze stopped on a group of figures in the farthest cage. They were half the size of the men, and, for a brief moment, she thought they were children. Then she noticed their beards and the stockiness of their arms and legs, and realized she was looking at a group of dwarves. Emma reflected that if Michael were here, he would be having like 19 heart attacks. Personally, she couldn't see what the big deal was. They were short, okay, and their beards were kind of funny, but she wasn't going to go out and start a fan club. As she was thinking about this, the largest of the dwarves, the one with the filthy blonde beard, who'd been hurling abuse at the screechers, moved, and Emma let out a gasp. Ignoring the hiss from the young warrior, Emma scampered past Dina to the break in the wall where Gabriel knelt. He was fitting a thick black arrow on the string of his bow. Emma seized him by the arm and pointed. It was all she could do not to cry out. In the farthest cage, standing among the dwarves, wearing clothes she had seen him wear 1,000 times before, and an expression that even from this distance told of bewilderment and fear, was her brother Michael. A black-bearded dwarf stood beside him, his hand on Michael's shoulder. Gabriel nodded, indicating that he'd seen Michael already, and gestured to a building across the square. The whole front of the building was missing, allowing Emma to see directly into the rooms. There, on the second floor, sitting between a screecher and a short figure in a suit, who she immediately recognized as the Countess's secretary, was Kate. Questions swirled through Emma's mind. How had her brother and sister come to be here? Were they all right? How had the secretary found them? A pained cawing cut the air, and a black shape fell out of the darkness and into the room where Kate was being held. There was a soft twang beside her as Gabriel released his arrow. The screecher, with Kate, staggered and fell. Then, it was all happening so quickly now. The secretary gave a strangled shout. There was a volley of rifle fire, the thick swoof of a dozen arrows taking flight, the broken thudding as they found their targets, and all was chaos and shouting. Dropping his bow, Gabriel pulled the falchion off his back, gave a great bellowing cry, and leaped through the gap in the wall. The battle had begun. Kate lay on her stomach beside the motionless body of the screecher. A dark, foul-smelling ooze was leaking from its wound.
Birdie!
The secretary was behind the desk. He'd scurried for cover in the first moments after the attack.
Come here!
She ignored him. Propping herself on her elbows, she inched forward till she had a clear view into the square. It was a mass of dark, struggling figures. There were shouts and cries, sickening crunches, the clang of metal on metal, and, above everything, the inhuman shrieks of the screechers. Kate felt the familiar sweeping weakness, the inability to draw breath, and, to her surprise, she found she was furious. No, she told herself, it's not real. Her anger must have given her thoughts force, for while the screams were still awful, the invisible hands crushing her lungs vanished almost at once. Breathing deeply, Kate sent Gabriel a silent thank you. She stared down into the square, trying to make sense of what she was seeing. Who was fighting who? How did they not all hit each other accidentally? Then, just as she was noticing the bare heads of the attackers and feeling relief that they were men and not some strange underground race of mole people, she didn't actually know if there were such a thing, she would have to ask Michael, she saw Gabriel himself. He was in the thickest knot of the fighting, carving his way through the screeches with long, vicious swings of his falchion. He looked unstoppable, and the sight of him gave her hope. But only for a moment, for as Kate watched Gabriel hack his way through the screeches, she noticed that more and more of the Countess's black-clad horde were pouring into the square. At the start of the battle, Gabriel's men and the Moram Cadi had been fairly evenly matched. But with each passing second, the balance was shifting to the screechers. Gabriel's men would soon be completely surrounded, and that would be that. The end.
Kate!
Michael's voice penetrated the din, and she looked left toward the cages. Michael and Wallace stood apart from the pack of dwarves and men massing at the bars. Michael jumped, pointed toward the fighting, and shouted something. It was lost in the clamor, but Kate understood. He'd seen Gabriel and thought they were going to be rescued. He couldn't see that Gabriel and his men were doomed. They needed help. They needed 2-3 times the men. An idea seemed almost to explode in Kate's mind. She turned to the dead screecher, reaching beneath its tunic. The corpse had an unnatural cold hardness. Just touching it made Kate nauseous, but she forced her hand between its body and the floor, feeling along the creature's belt. Earlier, when it had entered the room, she'd heard a soft jangling. Come on, she thought, come on! Her hand closed on a bundle of keys. A weight slammed down on her.
No, no, bad birdie, bad, bad, bad!
The secretary had thrown himself on top of her. Clammy hands scrambled for her wrists. He was panting, his breath warm and sour against her cheek. Kate struggled, but the man was much stronger.
Must be punished, yes. Disobedient. The Countess has ways. Ways to make you obey. Bad birdies must learn.
He was still hissing threats when Kate turned her head and bit down on his ear. It tasted foul and sweaty, and the man shrieked. But she kept biting harder and harder till she tasted blood, and he let go of her wrists. Then, using all her strength, she pushed against him. She'd only planned on getting him off her back, but she heard his shriek change and looked in time to see him disappearing out the open wall. She crawled to the edge. The secretary lay without moving on the ground. Well, Kate thought, serves you right, and she spat to clear her mouth. Turning back, she reached under the screecher, took hold of the keys, and yanked them free. Then it was down the stairs, out the building, and across the square. Michael had squeezed through the crowd of men and dwarves, and they embraced awkwardly through the bars. She wanted to ask if he was okay, but there was no time.
"Gabriel's here," Michael began. "I know. He needs help."
She was looking at the ring of keys. There were a half dozen. She would have to try them all.
"The silver key, with a hole in the center. Hurry!"
It was a man who'd spoken. He was as thin and filthy as the others, but there was still fire in his hollow eyes. Something about him struck Kate as familiar.
"Hurry, girl!"
With nervous fingers, Kate started to fit the silver key in the lock.
"I know! That ain't the way!"
A hairy, knuckled hand reached through the bars and grabbed at the keys.
"I'm the king, right? Only fitting I'm the one opens the door. Protocol and such..."
"Stop it!" Kate yelled. "There isn't time!"
"Stop it?"
Hamish snorted, still yanking at the keys.
"Who are you to tell me to stop anything, eh? Who's the bloody king here?"
"Watch out!" Michael cried.
Kate looked over her shoulder. A screecher was running at her, sword raised to strike. Suddenly the creature jerked about and collapsed. Two arrows were buried in its back.
"See there! Now quit acting the brat and let go, or... oof!"
The keys were released. Wallace had stepped up and calmly punched his king in the gut.
"Go on," Wallace said. "Open the door."
Kate fit the key in the lock, turned it, and a flood of men came pouring out. The man who told her which key to use was among the first.
"Free the others," he commanded. "Do it, quickly."
And he picked up the sword from the fallen screecher, shouted, "Follow me!" and charged toward the battle. Weak and sickly as the men had seemed minutes before, they ran after him, grabbing what weapons they could, swords, shovels, axes, along the way. Hamish lumbered out, still gasping, and pointed a sausagey finger at Wallace.
"You get yours one day, laddie. Don't you worry."
Then he snatched up an axe, marshaled the other dwarves, and charged into battle. Kate had to admit, whatever else Hamish was, he was no coward. Michael nearly knocked her over with his hug.
"I know," Kate whispered as she hugged him back. "I know. It's okay."
Wallace stood a few feet off. He picked up a short pickaxe. Kate could see he wasn't going to leave them. She kissed the top of Michael's head. His hair was unwashed and greasy, but she couldn't have cared less.
"Come on, we need to free the others." "Let me go. Gabriel said, my brother and sister need me."
The moment Gabriel and the other men had charged into the square, Emma had set off. Kate and Michael were nearby and in trouble. She wasn't going to wait around with her hands in her pockets. She would free Michael from his cage. She wasn't quite sure how yet. The two of them would get Kate away from the secretary. She wasn't sure how she'd accomplish that either, but it would probably involve her being incredibly brave while Michael scribbled some nonsense in his notebook. And then they would all three finally be together. Of that she was absolutely sure. There was just one problem. The young warrior, her and Dina's appointed guardian, had intercepted Emma as she made her break, and now held her, struggling, a foot off the ground.
"You gotta let me go! Gabriel wants you to stop!"
He grabbed Dina by the ankle just as she was climbing out the window, knife in hand, clearly intent on joining the battle.
"Let go of me! I'm gonna kill a screecher! And I gotta help my brother and sister!"
They continued like this for several minutes, the two girls struggling, pleading, threatening. Emma warning the boy, he really was just a boy, that if he didn't let her go by the time she counted to five, he was going to be really, really sorry. Then counting to five and announcing she would give him to 10. But then that was it. Emma knew the boy was only doing what Gabriel had told him, so she didn't think it really fair to bite and kick her way free, which made her threats finally somewhat empty. And Dina doing much the same on her side of the young warrior, prying at his fingers, digging her nails into his hand, and the boy wondering what he had done to make Gabriel punish him like this, when they heard a low, raspy hiss. They turned as one. The screecher stood there, sword drawn and watching them. Immediately the young warrior dropped Dina and Emma and reached for his falchion. But the girls had sent him off balance, and he stumbled backward, tripping over a pile of rubble, and falling just as the screecher's sword cupped the air in front of him. Without thinking, Emma grabbed a stone. The screecher was moving in for the kill when the stone bounced off its head, drawing the creature's attention. At the same moment, Dina attacked from the other side, burying her knife in the screecher's leg. The creature let out one of its terrible, breath-crushing shrieks, and sent Dina spinning with a backhand blow. It pulled the knife free, and there was a thick, crunching chunk. Everything stopped. The creature looked down. The young warrior had buried his falchion halfway through its body. The boy stood, yanked the blade free, and then brought it down, driving the monster to the ground. The creature's body lay there, smoking. The whole thing had only taken a few seconds. The young warrior wiped his falchion on the back of the screecher, then faced Emma and Dina.
"All right, we'll find your brother and sister," he looked at Dina, "and you can help kill any screechers we meet on the way."
Together the three of them moved out of the house and along the edge of the square. Groups of Moram Khadi continued to spring from the shadows of the city, and the young warrior had to force Emma and Dina to take cover as the creatures ran by. At one point, there was an explosion when a gas lamp ignited. It collapsed into a building, and soon a fire was raging on the far side of the square. Their views of the battle were fragmented and confusing, but even so, it soon became clear that Gabriel's fighters were badly outnumbered. And then, something unexpected happened. Emma and Dina and the boy had paused in an alley between two ruined buildings, and were watching the fighting with sinking hearts, when a group of men rushed past from the direction of the cages. It took Emma a moment to realize that the men were prisoners and must have somehow gotten free. Her next thought was of Michael. Had he been freed as well? Was he safe? From the alley where she and her companions crouched, they couldn't see to the cages themselves, but more and more men were running past. They were a sight to behold. Thin and ragged and wielding such weapons as they could scavenge, they fought with a ferocity that even Gabriel's men couldn't match. They had been prisoners for nearly 2 years. This was their moment. And they weren't alone. Emma saw the stout blonde dwarf, flanked by several other smaller dwarves, chug past, huffing and puffing through his thick beard. He literally bulldozed into a pack of screechers, knocking them to the ground, and then, without stopping, he set about chopping his way through the Countess's army. Rather than surrounding Gabriel's band, the Moram Khadi were now being forced to fight enemies in front and behind. The tide of the battle was turning. After they had opened the last of the cages, and the last of the men had half stumbled, half charged toward the battle, Wallace made Kate and Michael climb to the third floor of one of the buildings overlooking the square.
"Look!" Kate cried, when the three of them had gathered at a blown-out window and could take in the scene in its entirety. "They're winning!"
The two groups of men, Gabriel's band and the newly freed prisoners, had surrounded the amoeba of dark figures and were steadily carving it into smaller and smaller pieces. A yellowish haze hung over the battle, which puzzled Kate, until she recalled the rancid vapour that escaped the bodies of expired screechers.
"They aren't screaming as much," Michael said.
It was true. The air was being rent less frequently by the creatures' inhuman shrieks, mostly, it seemed, and this was an encouraging fact, because there were fewer of the monsters. Just then, one of their cries was cut short. The sound echoed away across the cavern before finally fading into the darkness. Kate held her breath. The next cry came a few seconds later. It was followed by another, then another. But these were not the dead shrieks of the Morancadi. The shouts came from the men, yelling because the battle was over, and they had won.
"They did it!" Kate marveled. "They really did it!"
"You deserve credit too, girl."
Wallace's eyes glowed warmly under his dark brows.
"Hadn't been for your quick thinking, whole affair would have gone very different.
Aye, no doubt of that."
Michael clucked his tongue.
"It's just a shame."
He saw the other two looking at him like he'd lost his mind.
"Not having my camera. It's a historic moment."
Footsteps pounded toward them. Wallace whirled around, raising his pickaxe. Kate just had time to glimpse the figure charging at her and think,
"No, it can't be."
And then Emma was in her arms. And it was her. It really and truly was her. Kate and Emma hugged, cried, broke apart to look at each other, then hugged and cried some more. Even Michael, whose sense of personal dignity as the only boy in the family kept him from ever appearing too effusive, had to remove his glasses and rub at his eyes because he
got some dirt in them.
"Emma, it's you, it's really you, oh, Emma."
Kate kept repeating her sister's name over and over, pressing her close as if she would never let her go ever again.
"I'm so sorry."
Emma had tears streaming down her face.
"I know I shouldn't have disobeyed you. You said not to go back, but..."
"No, shh. It's okay. You're here now."
"Yes, but she did disobey you," Michael pointed out.
"Michael!"
Kate gave him a warning look.
"Oh, who cares?"
he said generously. "All's well that ends well, right?" And he gave Emma a manly pat on the shoulder.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
Kate asked.
"Really, truly okay?"
"Yes, I'm fine. I was with Gabriel. I saw you both before the battle, then I spotted you in the window here. Oh, this is Dina, and I don't know his name."
Emma gestured to the two figures who'd followed her up the stairs, and who Kate was only now noticing. One was a dark-haired, serious-faced girl, not much older than Emma herself. The other was a teenage boy who held a fearsome-looking weapon similar to the one Gabriel carried.
"Gabriel told him to watch out for us, though we kind of saved him."
"Hey!"
"This is Wallace,"
Michael blurted, pointing at their companion.
"Hi,"
Emma said. She turned to Kate.
"You wouldn't believe all that's happened."
"Wallace is a dwarf,"
Michael was grinning broadly.
"Yeah,"
Emma said, a little annoyed at being interrupted. "I figured that out."
"Dwarves are real."
Emma rolled her eyes and groaned.
"I knew he was going to do this."
"Just tell your story,"
Kate said.
"I want to know everything. What happened after you left us?"
"Right. So I got to the bridge, the rope one, remember, and Gabriel was fighting these screechers, and I saved his life, but then I got shot in the stomach."
"Oh, I had a dream. I saw you hurt."
"I'm okay now. Gabriel took me to his village. On the way, he had to kill this monster. I was asleep for that part, so I couldn't help. And there was this wise woman named Granny Pete, and she fixed me. She said you found Dr. Pym. Is that true?" "I wish you could meet Granny Pete. She's one of the good ones. She..."
Kate wanted to tell her to slow down, but before she could, There was a high-pitched shriek from the square.
Fools!
They turned. The secretary had climbed onto a massive mound of rubble. Kate was shocked he was alive, much less moving around, and she watched as the men, who, with the battle over, had begun seeing to their wounded, stopped and faced him. The secretary's head was bleeding, his suit was ripped, and there was something wrong with his right arm, which he cradled against his body. The man was shaking with hatred and rage. Kate could see spittle flying from his mouth.
You are all fools! You think you can fight the Countess? Defeat the Countess? You have no idea of her power. You will all die. All of you will die.
Is he crazy? Emma said. He lost. Why doesn't someone conk him on the head?
What's that noise?
Michael asked. Kate listened, and at first heard nothing. What was Michael talking? She stopped. There was a soft pattering in the far, dark reaches of the city. It grew louder, and Kate realized it was moving toward them. Glancing down, she saw the men in the square had heard it, too.
You will all die, all of you!
The sound quickly became a thrumming, a pounding. She felt it through her feet. The windowsill vibrated under her hands. And then Kate saw the blackness beyond the lights become liquid and surge toward them.
No,
Wallace whispered.
Can't be.
What? Kate grabbed at his arm. What is it?
There!
Michael shouted. The dark tide had reached the perimeter of the gas lamps. Kate stared, and all hope inside her died. The secretary was giggling hysterically, hopping up and down.
Yes, yes, yes!
There were hundreds of them, a grey-green mass of hunchback figures scurrying along the streets, scrambling over the ruins. Close enough now, the children could hear the snarling and growling, the scrape of their claws on stone, and still, under and above it all, the pounding of their feet, like the onrush of a storm.
What are those?
Emma cried.
The Salmatar,
Wallace said.
The witch has summoned them.
Kate, of course, had seen such creatures before. In her dream, she had watched Gabriel fight one as Emma lay unconscious on the floor of the maze. They were the sightless, razor-clawed monsters that lived in the deepest bowels of the mountains. She remembered Wallace telling them how the Countess had made alliances with the creatures. This was her doing. The witch had called up this evil to destroy them.
To me!
Gabriel roared.
To me!
No, Kate thought, no. They had to run. There were too few of them. They were tired, wounded. The secretary was right. They were all going to die. But already a line was forming with Gabriel at its center, and she watched as men and dwarves alike raised their weapons. And then Gabriel, tall, fearsome, bleeding from a dozen different wounds, stepped forward so that he stood in front of the line, alone, waiting for the wave to crash.
What's he doing? Michael said. He's crazy!
Shut up! Emma cried. Her voice was desperate, breaking, betraying all her fear.
He's showing them how to be brave. He's...
She threw herself against Kate, burying her face in her sister's chest and sobbing. Below them, the creatures poured into the square, snarling, hissing. Gabriel raised his falchion. Kate pressed Emma to her breast even more tightly. Instinctively, Kate's head whipped toward the sound. It had come from somewhere off in the darkness. A horn, she thought. That was a horn.
They stopped,
Emma cried. Kate looked back. The Salmaktar were only yards from Gabriel. Their numbers filled the square. But the entire, gasping, drooling mass had indeed stopped and was turned toward the sound.
Elves, bells,
Wallace said, and Kate saw that the dwarf was grinning.
It's about time.
Michael suddenly let out a yelp. It sounded sort of like, wahahoo! And jumped, jabbing his finger in excitement.
Look! 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 Look who it is!
A short figure was racing up one of the half-lit streets toward the square. He was encased head to toe in dark armor, so only his face and beard were visible, the plaits of his beard slapping against his breastplate as he ran. He held a great shining axe in one hand and a bone-colored horn in the other. Despite the darkness and the distance, Kate recognized him immediately.
"It's Captain Robbie."
"Who?"
Emma asked.
"He's our friend," Michael said.
"Well, he did lock us in jail, but that was just following procedure. You can't fault him for following..."
"Why did he come alone?"
Emma interrupted.
"He's going to get murdered. Dwarves are so stupid."
Before Michael could argue, Captain Robbie reached the edge of the square, planted his feet, and blew once more into the horn. The sound echoed across the cavern, fading, fading, and then silence. No one stirred. Not the Salmaktar, not Gabriel, or the men, not Wallace or Dina, or the young warrior, not the children. Then they heard it, a rhythmic, metallic pounding, growing louder and louder, and then legions of dwarves were charging out of the darkness, filling the streets, their axes reflecting the glow from the lamps, their armor clanking and jangling, their collective breathing and even reassuring. When they reached the square, Captain Robbie stepped forward and barked a command. The army stopped.
"What's he doing?"
Emma demanded.
"He needs to attack. He should be killing those things. Dwarves are so stupid."
"Whoa!"
Kate reached for her sister. The entire building had begun to sway and rock. Dina fell into the young warrior, knocking them both to the floor. Looking out the window, Kate saw that everything, the whole ruined city, was in motion.
"What's going on?"
Emma yelled over the tumult.
"What's happening?"
"Damn us all,"
Wallace shouted.
"It's a bloody earthquake. Hold on, hold on."
"No."
Michael was gripping the windowsill as you would a ship's railing during a storm.
"It's Dr. Pym."
He pointed, and Kate and Emma saw the white-haired wizard standing atop a building, his arms raised out over the city.
"He's doing it."
"What the bloody hell for?"
Wallace shouted.
"He'll kill us all."
"Kate!"
Emma tucked at her arm, and Kate looked toward the square. At first, she didn't understand. The main body of the monsters seemed to be sinking. Then she realized the earth was opening up under them. The thought barely had time to register before fully half the horde was swallowed up in a screeching, tumbling mass, disappearing into darkness. Just as quickly, the fissure closed, the shaking and rolling stopped, and the children's own building came to rest. Kate turned back to Dr. Pym. The old man had lowered his arms and was calmly taking out his pipe. She made a mental note never to doubt the wizard's power again.
"Dwarves!" Captain Robbie raised his axe. "Attack!"
The remaining Salmaktar turned and fled.
"No! No!"
The secretary was jumping up and down, tearing at his meager strands of hair.
"Fight! You must fight!"
But his cries were useless. The Salmaktar were clambering over each other in a panicked attempt to escape. Gabriel and the men had stepped back to let the charging dwarves pass through. And above it all, above the clashing of the armor, the thunderous stamp of boots, the frenzied terror of the monsters, Kate could hear the voice of the dwarf captain filling the cavern.
"Drive them, brothers! Drive them to the pits! Drive them! Drive them!"
And she knew then, finally, the battle was over. Chapter 20. Kate's Vision.
You see, when Catherine touched the book and travelled into the past, 4 years from this point, which for you three is not the present at all, but already 15 years into the past. She told me everything that was going to transpire with the missing will, and Hamish becoming king, etc., and etc. I, armed with this terrible knowledge, went immediately to Queen Esmeralda, Robbie and Hamish's mother, and a very dear friend of mine. Then and there, she wrote out her will proclaiming Robbie the next king, and had the document notarized and sealed, and together we secreted it away. Dr. Pym was explaining to the children how it was that he and Robbie had escaped Hamish's dungeon and come to arrive in the dead city with a brigade of armored dwarves. They were all of them, the children, Dr. Pym, Robbie and Gabriel, crammed into the room where, before the battle, the secretary had interrogated Kate. It was now being used as a sort of informal headquarters, as messengers pushed past one another on their way in and out, and Robbie and Gabriel huddled around the desk with a group of hotly arguing men and dwarves. The children had been summoned there without being told why. Following the battle, they had been in the building across the square, bringing each other up to date on their respective adventures. Upon entering the room, Emma had literally launched herself into Gabriel's arms, crying, "You did it!" For her part, Kate wished that whoever was in charge would have chosen a different meeting place. The memory of biting into the secretary's ear and the sour sweat and blood taste that accompanied it had returned the moment she crossed the threshold. She wondered when she would get to brush her teeth again. "You might well ask," Dr. Pym continued. He had led the children a few feet away. "Why I waited as long as I did to produce the Queen's will. But here is the crucial point. I needed Kate to enter the vault, touch the book, and bring it to me in the past. Only by hiding the book in the past could I protect it from the Countess. And I knew if I merely bided my time, this was exactly what would happen. Therefore, I waited. When I finally deemed the moment was right, I had Robbie summon his lawyer."
Dr. Pym then revealed the location of the will. It was recovered and examined by a panel of judges, as well as by handwriting and fingerprint experts, dwarves being sticklers for protocol. This received an approving nod from Michael, and the will being verified genuine, Captain, now King, Robbie, mustered his army and marched to the dead city.
"So you see," Dr. Pym concluded, "it is as clear as a summer's day."
"I don't get it," Emma said.
"Which part, my dear?"
"The whole part."
"Dr. Pym planned it all," Kate said. "He knew Hamish would be listening to us in the dungeon. He tricked him into taking me and Michael to the vault. He made sure I touched the book first. He planned everything."
"But..."
Michael had been taking notes. Now he paused, addressing the wizard.
"Did you only know to do all that because Kate had gone into the past and told you what was going to happen? Were you just pretending not to recognize us in the dungeon?"
"That requires a bit of a complicated answer," Dr. Pym said, scratching his chin thoughtfully, "as there are now two versions of the past. In the original past, I knew nothing of future events, and no doubt based my actions upon the connection I saw between your sister and the book. However, in the rewritten past, which occurred after your sister retrieved the book and went back in time..."
Kate was watching the wizard. Her feelings toward him had changed. He had outsmarted Hamish and the secretary, made Robbie king, saved Gabriel and the men. Kate now truly believed he was on their side. But he was still not telling them everything he knew about their parents, obviously, but also about her and her siblings' role in all that was happening. In the throne room, he'd said they were the children he'd been waiting for, and the secretary had said almost the exact same thing, that she and Michael and Emma were the chosen three. What did that mean? What was the wizard hiding?
"I knew how events had played out in the other, now alternate past," Dr. Pym said, "and, wishing things to proceed in exactly the same way, I attempted to behave as I might have done had I been ignorant of the future. This is the version of the past, Michael, that you and I remember.
Catherine, being the time traveller, is the only one who remembers the original past. So, to answer your question, as far as your memory is concerned, yes, I did pretend not to recognize you in the dungeon. As far as your sister's memory is concerned, no, I had absolutely no idea who she was. Michael looked at him. Now I don't get it. Then, just understand this, Dr. Pym sighed. If Catherine had not shown the resourcefulness she did, King Robbie and I would still be in the dungeon, and all of Gabriel's men, all the men of Cambridge Falls, would be dead.
He's right.
Robbie had stepped over from the group at the desk.
And should you ever need my strength, or my people's, you've only to ask.
With that, the new dwarf king bowed so low before Kate that the braided tips of his beard brushed the floor. Oh, please, Kate said, blushing deeply. Don't do that. It's really kind of embarrassing. Anyway, Michael did as much as I did. Robbie straightened up.
Aye, true enough.
He coughed into his fist and assumed a formal tone.
Michael, whatever your last name is, it was you telling off Hamish for the prat he was that reminded me what it means to be a dwarf. In recognition of that, I do hereby appoint you royal guardian of all dwarfish traditions and history.
He snapped his fingers, and a dwarf stepped forward and handed the king a small badge, which he pinned to Michael's sweater.
Your Highness, Michael stammered, I wish I'd had a chance to prepare some remarks.
Robbie clapped him on the shoulder.
Aye, lad, you'd have made a grand dwarf, a grand dwarf.
Emma looked less than thrilled to see Michael getting so much attention, and as Robbie gave Michael a furry kiss on each cheek, Kate heard her mutter,
I'm the one that got shot with an arrow.
Emma had been, of course, impressed to hear about Michael standing up to Hamish and placing his own hand upon the chopping block, or perhaps not so much impressed, Kate reflected, as dumbfounded, since she kept repeating,
Really? Michael did that? Really? Michael?
In any case, Kate was about to tell her to quit muttering and let Michael enjoy his moment, when he turned toward them grinning and puffing out his chest, a look of pure joy upon his face. And before Kate knew it, she and Emma were both hugging him, saying how proud they were of him, Emma punching him in the arm only a little too hard. It wasn't till Michael cleared his throat and offered that he might say a few words after all that Kate jumped in and suggested that later might be better.
Yeah, Emma said, looking immensely relieved. We always love to hear you talk about dwarves and stuff, but we got other things to talk about first, like the Atlas. We should probably talk about that.
My dear, Dr. Pym said, how did you learn that name? I'm quite amazed.
Kate saw Emma glance at Michael and give a pleased little shrug.
Oh, I know lots of things. Did you know that's what it's called, Michael?
Michael shook his head.
Well, that's what it is, all right. The Atlas. You should write it down so you don't forget.
Kate did not mention that she had heard this from the secretary.
Your sister is indeed correct, Dr. Pym said. Each of the books of beginning has a unique name. Technically, the book we are searching for is the Atlas of Time.
That's right, Emma said, nodding seriously. Technically.
But it is usually just referred to as the Atlas. An appropriate name, as the book contains maps of all possible pasts, presents, and futures, and allows one to move through both time and space. But now is not the moment to get into all the whys and wherefores.
Sure, Emma said. We can get into those later. All the whys and stuff.
In listening to Dr. Pym, it had occurred to Kate that ever since hearing the book's true name, she had begun to think of it as the Atlas. The name simply felt right.
What about Hamish? Michael asked. Is he really not king any more?
That he is not, Robbie said. I sent him back to the palace, said I wanted it scrubbed top to bottom by him personally, and to shave off that beard of his. Disgusting it was.
Hamish used to be the king, Emma informed Gabriel. He also had left the group around the desk and entered their circle. He tried to cut off Kate's hand. Then Michael stopped him. At least that's the story.
Hey!
Fine, you're a hero,
Emma rolled her eyes.
Go polish your medal.
Robbie told them that upon hearing he was no longer king, Hamish had tried to commit suicide by chopping off his own head. However, all he succeeded in doing was knocking himself unconscious, and it required several buckets of cold water to bring him around. This was, Robbie added, the closest Hamish had come to a bath in months. As the others continued talking, Kate stepped over to the blown-out wall and looked down into the square. The battle won. The dwarves had erected a field kitchen and set about boiling huge vats of carrots, onions, tomatoes, and beef, the smell of which had quickly overwhelmed the rancid stench of expired screeches. Now men who hadn't had a decent meal in 2 years gobbled down bowls of stew as fast as the dwarf servers could bring them to the tables. Kate turned to look at the cages. The secretary was the sole prisoner. He was in the nearest cage, cradling his hurt arm and rocking back and forth. Was it true what he'd said? Did Dr. Pym intend to send her back in time to retrieve the Atlas? Her heart quickened at the thought that she might see her mother again. At the same time, she felt a stab of guilt. Twice now, first with Michael, then with Emma after the battle, she told her story of touching the book and going into the past. Neither time had she mentioned seeing their mother. Why? What was her reason for keeping it secret? Kate became aware that the secretary was staring directly at her.
Enough! We must act!
Tearing herself from the man's gaze, Kate turned back to the room. The speaker was the gaunt, fierce-eyed man who told her which key opened the cage doors. He was leaning forward on the desk, and Kate suddenly noticed his tangled mass of red-brown hair and realized why he'd looked so familiar.
We know your son, Stephen McClattery. We met him, she added quickly. He's fine. We saw him a couple of days ago, and he was totally fine.
The effect of Kate's words was instant and dramatic. It was as if the man had been straining against a rope, and the rope was abruptly cut. His head dropped, and his whole body seemed to sag forward. Kate knew this must be the first he'd heard of his son in 2 years. He probably hadn't even known if the boy was alive or dead. Finally, the man wiped at his face and looked up. There were smeared tear tracks on his grimy cheeks.
Thank you, he said thickly. But every moment we spend talking gives the witch more time to take revenge on our children. Right you are, Robbie said. Doctor, you want to tell the young'uns what we need from them?
Here is the situation.
Dr. Pym adjusted his tortoiseshell glasses, a process that made them no less crooked.
Our next task is to march to Cambridge Falls and liberate the imprisoned children, including your friend Stephen McClattery.
He's not my friend, Emma muttered. He's actually pretty annoying.
Oh!
She glared at Kate.
Why'd you poke me?
The issue, Dr. Pym continued, is that as long as the Countess holds the children hostage, we can't risk a direct assault on her house.
But you're a wizard, Michael said. You made an earthquake. Can't you do something?
Unfortunately, the Countess has set up certain barriers around the house and town that limit my capabilities. We must resort to more conventional means, which again brings us to you three. You were able to escape the house. I wonder...
Oh!
Emma's hand shot in the air.
Yes, my dear?
There's a secret passage. It goes from the room where the kids are and comes out the side of the house. Abraham took us through.
But we could find it again. Easy.
We already told him about that, Michael said, back in the dungeon.
True, Dr. Pym said, but I was going to ask you to tell everyone else.
Wonderful foresight, my dear.
You're welcome, Emma said, and smiled triumphantly at Michael.
Right then, King Robbie clapped. Here's what we do. A few of us creep up to the house, slip the nippers out through this secret passage all sneaky Pete. Once that's done, hello, hello, the rest of us make our attack. Aye, that's a brilliant plan, that is.
There was general nodding and murmuring. Michael was nervously fingering his new badge.
What if the Countess already knows she's lost the battle? Won't she be expecting us?
Perhaps, Dr. Pym said. But we have little choice except to proceed and hope for the best. As Mr. McClattery pointed out, many young lives hang in the balance. Now, Gabriel and I and the children will...
Just then, there was a large thud, and everyone looked to see Kate lying unconscious on the floor.
Feeling better, my dear?
Kate blinked. A trio of concerned faces stared down at her. She forced herself to sit up. She had been laid on a very hard, very lumpy couch in a room she didn't recognize. Emma, Michael, and Dr. Pym moved back to give her space.
What happened? Emma asked. You were standing there, and then you, like, fell over.
Kate pressed her fingers to her temples. Sitting up had made her light-headed. She could hear outside the door many footsteps moving quickly past.
I think I'm just tired. And hungry.
Well, Dr. Pym said, you have all had a very trying day. We'll get you something to eat.
And drink,
Michael said.
I bet we're dehydrated and don't even know it.
Your brain's dehydrated, Emma said.
Very likely, Michael replied. The brain's the most sensitive organ in your body.
Emma muttered something inaudible. Kate looked around. There was a single gas lamp on the floor, and stacked against one wall were baskets of turnips, onions, carrots, sacks of potatoes. The cooks were clearly using this room for storage.
You're certain that's all it was, my dear?
Hunger?
The wizard was staring at her intently. Kate closed her eyes. She could still see it happening.
Catherine?
She wished he would stop pressuring her. She knew why she'd fainted, and she had no intention whatsoever of talking about it.
Perhaps I could help if...
Why didn't you tell us you knew our parents?
Instantly, Kate realized what she'd done. She'd only meant to distract everyone, to get them talking about something besides her fainting. But she'd spoken in haste, and now... She glanced at Michael and Emma and saw their confusion. How long did she have before they put it together?
When should I have told you, Catherine?
Dr. Pym had taken off his glasses and was cleaning them on his tie.
In the dungeon? I've already explained why it was important to pretend I had no idea who you were. And in the original past, well, then I truly had no idea who you were.
But you gave me that memory.
Now that it was out, Kate wanted an answer. You sent me to that moment. You had to have known.
Well, I suspected, yes. Partly from your story, but also because one cannot look at you and fail to see your mother.
This silenced Kate. She looked like a mother? Against her will, she felt a thrill of joy.
Wait! Emma cried, finding her voice. What are you talking about? How's Dr. Pym know our parents?
Your parents, Dr. Pym replaced his glasses, are very close friends of mine. Richard and Claire. Those are their names.
But no, that's not... You would have told us. You... Why didn't you tell us?
Again, my dear, when could I possibly...
When we met you...
Emma was almost shouting now.
When we got to that stupid orphanage in the first place.
My dear Emma, That is more than 15 years in the future. I can't very well explain why I did something that I haven't done yet. But how?
Michael was looking at Kate.
Here it comes, she thought. Did you find out Dr. Pym knew our parents?
Kate swallowed. Her throat was like paper.
Our mum was there. In the past, when I saw Dr. Pym, I didn't tell you.
For a long moment, Michael and Emma simply stared at her. On their faces were expressions of utter disbelief. Not that Kate had seen their mother, but that she hadn't told them. Emma began crying, and the sight of it almost broke Kate's heart.
Emma, where are they?
Emma wrenched her head toward Dr. Pym.
Take us to them! Take us there now!
Emma,
now! I want to see them now!
My dear, Dr. Pym said,
don't you know I would like nothing better than to do just that? But I'm afraid it's not that simple.
Why not?
Tears were streaming down Emma's face.
He can't take us now, Michael said quietly. He has to stop the Countess first.
Shut up!
Emma snatched off the badge Robbie had given him and threw it into the corner.
And that's what I think of your stupid medal.
Emma, stop it.
Emma jerked away from Kate's hand.
Don't touch me. You lied to us. You should have told us, and you lied to us.
I know. I'm sorry.
Again Kate reached for her sister, and again Emma pushed her away.
I said don't touch me.
Kate had to stand because Emma was also standing, and this time when she reached for her, Emma didn't fight, but let her sister hold her, and Kate felt how tight and angry she was. But she kept holding her and whispering, and slowly Emma's sobs eased, and her body relaxed. Finally she asked,
"Are you okay?"
Emma nodded, sniffling, and wiped her sleeve across her face. She went to the corner of the room and retrieved Michael's badge.
I'm sorry. I hope it's not dented.
Michael forced a laugh.
You dent a piece of dwarf craftsmanship? Not likely.
But then he looked at her and offered a real smile.
It's okay.
Now,
Dr. Pym continued when they were settled, and Michael was once again wearing his badge.
Believe me, I do understand how confusing all this is, and how badly you three want to see your parents. And I promise that once the Countess is defeated and the children are safe, I will answer any questions you have. But today we have a great task before us.